Production funding for Behind the Headlines is made possible in part by the WKNO Production Fund, the WKNO Endowment Fund, and by viewers like you. Thank you.
How Lakeland and Millington schools are dealing with coronavirus tonight on Behind the Headlines. I'm Eric Barnes of the Daily Memphian. Thanks for joining us as we continue to do the show remotely. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Bo Griffin, Superintendent of Millington Municipal Schools. Bo, thanks for being here.
Eric, thanks for having me.
Along with Ted Horrell, the Superintendent of Lakeland School System. Ted, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, thank you.
And Bill Dries, reporter with the Daily Memphian. I will note to people viewing that over the past month or so, we've had the superintendents now with Ted and Bo of all the suburban and school systems, as well as Shelby County Schools. All those conversations are available on WKNO.org or as podcasts on the Daily Memphian site or wherever you get your podcasts. And and I'll start with you, Bo. Schools have been one of the front lines, obviously, of coronavirus and the huge impact it has had on us, both as, how we live economically, working parents. I mean, it's just the risks and health, not the least of which that. Let's start with a question I've asked all the superintendents so far, and I'll ask this of Ted as well. What does a typical day look like for Millington School staff and the kids? And let me say, for people who may be not familiar, that you have about 2,500 students in your—
Yes, sir, that's correct.
Or four schools, two elementary schools, a middle school, and a high school. But what does a typical day look like for you?
Well, we're on the hybrid schedule. So we have students have chosen in-person learning and also virtual learning. About 40% of our students chose the all virtual route. So basically school day is very similar. It would be as normal, except we only have about 60% of our students on campus in our facilities. It's a very trying time because this is a situation we could not just, pull education 101 off the shelf and use that plan to answer the questions that we're dealing with right now. But, our teachers have done an amazing job. Our students have more than done what we've asked of them, but especially our community. Our community has come together and really supported us in these times of uncertainty. But, we're just doing everything we can and make sure that we give our children the best opportunity to be educated in these troubling times.
Have you had, everyone's had cases in some level. Have you had many cases? How has that worked so far in terms of students or staff testing positive?
Well, we've had a few cases, yes, sir. One of the things is that all the cases have come from outside into the school. For example, a student goes to a birthday party, and then they find out that somebody has been tested positive for the virus, or if they have been outside of their home or situations or at ball games or their all kinds of family events. It's been very difficult. We're just trying to control what we can control, and that's what we can control is our environment at school. Our facilities manager, Mr. Phil LeBlanc, and all our leadership in the building have done a great job of following the three golden rules of COVID. We mask up, we keep 6 foot apart personally and social distancing, and we wash our hands at least 5 to 6 times a day. And our cleaning crews are wiping down touch points throughout the day, and the teachers, I joke about this, but I didn't know you could buy hand sanitizer in 55-gallon drums, but we have four of those on campus for our teachers. So we're, doing everything we can to try to negate as much as possible the virus. But once again, everybody it's been a team effort, and just very, very proud of the effort so far.
And we'll dig in some of those questions further, but I want to bring Ted in. And same thing, I assume you have about 1,900 students. You've got an elementary school, a middle school, and a high school under construction. For the two schools that are open, what does it look like to parents and staff?
Sure. It's a little different from the elementary to the middle school. At the elementary school, the students, for the most part, it probably feels a lot more, at least, like regular school, in that the classroom sizes allowed us to get class sizes that were fairly close to what we normally would, a little bit smaller. The main thing is we have a lot less circulation in the building than we typically would. So teachers come to the students eat lunch and breakfast in the classrooms. So we're trying to minimize that transition between classes.
And let me interrupt you. I'm sorry, Ted, just because it is heavy on people who are obsessed with this, and many of us are, it affects circulation. You mean the movement of students, not the circulation of air, because circulation of air is obviously a huge thing. Okay.
Yeah, circulation of air is something we do take seriously, but we're trying to minimize the circulation of students, certainly maximize the circulation of air, just so there's fewer potential for contacts. And that's worked well for us. We actually, in our two schools to date, check my phone every time I say this, we have not had one student case to date, and we have had one staff member case that was a home contact that we believe caused that. At the middle school, the students are in regular classrooms 3 days a week, and then 2 days a week they do most of their work through digital applications or pull out, where they do some of their specialty classes that way. So it's a bit like a hybrid schedule, but they're still at school doing it. And then for the second 9 weeks, we actually gave parents the option of letting their students do that work at home. So they're in school 3 days a week and work at home 2 days a week.
Okay, let me, we'll come back to a bunch of that, but let me bring in Bill Drees.
Let's talk about testing a little bit. Testing comes up as a priority, and then it will recede a bit in the public discussions of this. Bo, in terms of the logistics of it, testing for students, testing for staff, what do you think that looks like if that comes about in your school system?
Well, that's a question that's been brought up, and it's a one of the issues, of course, is going to be the finance behind it, you know, the cost. I know that for us, we've used a lot of our CARES Act money to go directly into the classroom and into the safety of our students and staff being here. It's a situation where I will take it to our board. I also take it to our community and our stakeholders, because it's not just a situation where I can say, okay, we're going to do this, and then everybody's going to take the test. It's still going to have a lot of input and a lot of questions to be asked before we can do something like that.
Mm-hmm. Would it be useful?
From all the data, I could see that it could be, but I could also see where parents would refuse to do that with their students. I understand that as well. I'm a parent as well. I've got a 9-year-old in our school district. But it's a situation where it's going to be, at the end of the day, we're going to do what's best for our students, and also what we can legally for our students as well.
Mm-hmm. Ted, this is kind of like balancing a number of balls in the air. What happens when you throw testing into it in your school system?
Well, we've only recently kind of been involved in conversations about what they call assurance testing or asymptomatic testing. And I think there's certainly a number of advantages, certainly some considerations, as Bo mentioned, the financial consideration and the logistics of it. It really, as I understand it, largely depends on having, you know, the entirety of a group of students, be that a cohort or a pod or whatever they call it, be willing to participate. If you don't have that, then I think it probably reduces the effectiveness of it pretty significantly. And our understanding is right now it would be voluntary if we asked, certainly if we asked students to do it. Teachers would be probably a different situation. And we're going to talk to some of the private schools that have been involved in the local pilots of this and get some more information about it. Mm.
Is that something that allows you kind of long-term planning for this? Does it make the future a bit more certain if you can have that assurance that would come if you can work out the testing?
That's an interesting question. I mean, so far, like I said, in our case, we feel like our strategy has been pretty good. In fact, we haven't had any student cases. We know it's a matter of time. And basically, we just stick to those principles. We're very, very strict about the 6 feet of social distancing, and we're very strict about masking. And we feel like that's been certainly key to the success. And I feel like that's probably the most important two elements, along with, you know, sanitation and cleaning of the buildings. But, we feel like we hope it's not too much longer, obviously, but we feel like we could continue on this pace pretty reasonably doing the things that we're doing now.
Bo, with the youngest students, how does this work? Is this the only normal that they've really known if they're new to school, and is maybe the transition a bit more difficult for the older kids who have a prior experience with school?
Well, we try to help out our younger students because our pre-K through second grade, they're going 4 days a week. So to try to build that norm, it's very difficult to teach a child how to read on an iPad. You know, pre-K through grade three, you really are learning how to read. And then fourth grade until you graduate and the rest of your life, you read to learn. So it's very important that we have that one-on-one with them. So we've brought those students in to work with those literacy skills and basic fundamental math skills as well. So it's a situation where their norm right now, if we brought them back 2 days a week, it would be very difficult when we went to 5 days a week with them when Shelby County Health Department lets us do that. So it's, there is no such thing as a new norm. thing changes not day by day, but hour to hour. As Dr. Horrell said, I think it's a very good point. We are constantly making adjustments, and we're constantly collaborating with the Shelby County Health Department, our city leaders, our building leaders, our nurses in our classes, in our schools. So we're constantly trying to reevaluate and do what we can. But the number one priority is to keep our students and our staff safe.
Mm-hmm. Ted, same question. How does this work with the youngest students?
That's probably the group that's most critical, I think, as we know, to get that in-person learning. In fact, we did some we do some testing at the start of the year that's more formative testing, benchmark testing. And what we found fairly, surprisingly, is that we didn't really see a big difference between where our K-8 students started this year versus where they started last year in terms of this kind of benchmark testing, with the exception of first and second grade. Those were the two areas where we saw more fall off that I think could, reasonably be linked to not being in school the last 9 weeks of the last year. So we promised parents we were going to meet the kids where they were when they got here, and that's what our teachers are doing. And we do feel like it is an advantage to have especially those younger grades in person. We've got them 5 days a week, if that's the option that the parents chose, and we feel like that's been best for them in our case.
Eric?
Yep. I wanted to go back to one thing, Bo, that you said about testing. It sounds like you've heard from, I don't want to put words in your mouth, you've heard from some parents and community members who really wouldn't want to do regular testing. Why is that? Because I think some people hear that and think, wow, if I could get tested on a regular basis and it was easy, and I'd love that. And I get that that's not everyone's response, but could you elaborate a little bit on the feedback you're getting from people who say, I'm not sure I want that kind of testing?
Yeah, Eric, I mean, that just goes back to the sense that, students and parents have rights, and, we cannot just mandate that they all take the assurance testing. Like Dr. Horrell said earlier, we have just recently been in conversation with moving forward. Of course, there's a lot of data out there that is saying that it can be very effective. I have seen where at the university level, once again, it's a little different because they are adults. They can make a choice on whether they want to take that test or not. But it's just the legality of it is the issue more than anything else.
Gotcha.
Because we don't want to step on the HIPAA or the FERPA rights of our students. And that's a major issue right there.
If you talked about money, and I mean, again, all these things you're talking about, from the 55 gallon drums of hand sanitizer to everything, these things cost money. If you could, this is a silly question on some level, so take it with a grain of salt, but if you had almost a blank check, and I'll start with you, Bo, to spend more money to make your environments safer and more effective, where would you be spending money if you could? And again, I'll stay with you, Bo.
Well, I think the recent studies showed that about 60% of all the schools in America need to update their HVAC systems. And my school system is one that we started a plan talking about that 2 years ago. There's just so much more technology that can better for the airflow and the circulation of fresh air with the new systems in HVAC. That's probably where I'd start more than anywhere else. Being able to control something like we can control, and that would be our HVAC. Having a blank check, that would be nice, but we know that that's not, you know, that's not going to, it's not possible.
It's not. And again, that's why I say take it with a grain of salt. Obviously.
But like I said, though, but you know, the thing is we've done everything we possibly can to keep our students and our staff safe, but I would definitely start with the HVAC systems in all the buildings.
Let me go to you, Ted, and the same question, and I'll add on the question. You have a high school under construction. Have you made changes to those plans and to that construction given COVID? And we all hope there's not a COVID 20 or 21 or 22, but this could happen again. And so how have you maybe changed things at the construction site?
Well, the short answer on that is we really didn't have the opportunity to make changes without significantly slowing down the project. You know, we are, fortunately, our buildings are newer, so we haven't had to struggle with some of the HVAC issues, I think, that some of our, you know, partner systems have had. You know, to answer your question about where additional funds could be used, like most things in education, it really comes down to people. I think if we had more bodies in the building, and that's one thing we've spent CARES Act money on, you know, the name of the game is really making smaller groups of students so there's less fewer opportunities for contact. In some cases, we have extra classrooms to put students in, but we don't have the teachers to staff those extra classrooms. So one of the things that we've done is we've used the other kind of areas in our building to spread students out, but typically they're being supervised by large groups of students supervised by fewer people, which is also gives them fewer opportunities for that direct kind of support and instruction. So really, we if we had more money, we'd probably, first of all, pay the people we've got more because they're working harder than I've ever seen a group of people work. And second, we'd probably get more people just to help.
Yeah, and I see Bo nodding his head to that. A quick question for both of you all, and then I'll go back to Bill. And I don't want to be coy about this. And I also don't want to put either of you in a bad spot, so bear with me. SCS, Shelby County Schools, has obviously been doing purely virtual learning, and they have announced that they're going to go back into some form of in-person in January. And obviously they have a, you know, what, some 90,000 students. It's a massive, massive school system. One thing they've talked about, and there's been a little bit of pushback on from parents, and again, all this is early, and you all don't have any decision-making part of that. You are separate school systems. They're doing, they're talking about doing some amount of bringing the kids into the classroom, but having a teacher on a screen. And it's not unprecedented. Other school systems and schools around the country have done that. I'll stay with you, Ted. Have you done any of that kind of teaching where, for whatever reason, maybe you have a teacher who's high risk, then for whatever reason, have you put teachers on the screen for in-person students, and how has that gone?
The only situation in which we've done that is, even though we have not had but one faculty case, we have had a number of situations where teachers or staff had to quarantine or be in isolation because of a potential contact. And in a very limited number of cases, those teachers, while they were quarantining from home, would telework and would we'd put them into the classroom. But it's been very, very limited.
How did it go?
In this particular situation, it was a younger student, so there were assistants in the room that were able to kind of fill in the gap. It was a pretty limited kind of experiment. For us, it was not something we would want to do on a large scale or
fair enough.
Very many cases.
Yeah, and Bo, same question to you. Have you done any of that by choice or by sort of necessity, as Ted just described?
Well, underneath our plan, with it being hybrid or being the full virtual, on Friday, all our teachers, we have no students on campus except for our special needs students because they do have to go 5 days a week because of their educational needs. But on Friday, our team, we use our team learning and our team video conferencing with our teachers to check in with our students. It's been something brand new. They're getting better at it every day. But they do that every Friday. We've had to have, just like Dr. Hoyle and other school districts, with, you know, teachers being quarantined. We've had staff members having to be quarantined. But we've used the virtual on Friday. That way, if we do have another situation where the school districts have to shut down like we did in the spring, we'll be ready for that. But that's I do right. feel like we are ready for that because of the great work done by our central office staff and our leaders in that, because every one of our students do have a one-on-one device. We were very fortunate in that. Mr. Matt Bowser and technology got those ordered, and we were one of the very first schools in the nation to get all our computers. That was great. But, you know, just like Dr. Horrell and municipalities and the private schools and charter schools and Shelby County schools, I do think every superintendent or director of schools is doing what they think is best in their situation for their students. I have no doubt that everyone's doing what they feel is safe and best for their students at this time.
Yeah. Let me go to Bill.
Ted, the governor has announced that the achievement test, I'll call it that generically, the achievement test that students take will not be used for evaluation purposes of where students are and how effective teachers are during at least this particular school year. Having said that, though, where do you see student achievement as being under these very unusual and very stressful circumstances for your students?
Sure, and our school board passed a resolution urging the legislature to cancel the testing overall and certainly not have accountability this year. On the other hand, I know the data would be useful and may be useful if that's the direction they go in terms of trying to benchmark and figure out what impact this style of teaching had. I've been really, really just kind of amazed and impressed by the quality and level of teaching that I've seen in the classrooms, both for our students that are learning from home and the ones that are in person. Even in the situations where the students are only in actual classrooms 3 days a week, like the middle school, I think they've actually benefited from the smaller groupings. And anecdotally, the teachers have said that, you know, they like having those smaller class sizes and maybe are more effective during those 3 days a week than they would be with bigger classes 5 days a week in some cases. So I'm hoping and I'm optimistic that the overall impact on our students would be minimal, because I think we did continue with learning to a certain extent during the spring, but definitely hit the ground running on August 10th and opened on time with as many in-person students as wanted to be here. And I'm optimistic it's made a difference for the students.
Mm-hmm. Bo, where do you think your students are? I mean, this is pretty complicated for kids to have to go through, and adults as well. Are you concerned that they might be losing some ground here?
Well, yes, sir, I am concerned because, you know, one of the things that we've seen was that we get our latest, we do a lot of data checks and we do a lot of assessing of our students to see where they're at, because we can't fix a problem until we know where the problem is or where the problem lies. One of the aspects is that a lot of our students, they, when we first tested them, yes, their reading levels were a little lower than we expected. However, I've noticed now that we got them back in the routine, and we really hadn't lost that knowledge, we just lost the routine. Students are amazing to me, like Dr. Horrell says, and our teachers. Once they get back in the routine of reading, writing, arithmetic, it is amazing how they can bounce back. I'm very excited that the governor stood up for the educators in this regard, because one of the aspects is that we got to realize too is that our students have never been through a pandemic. They've never had a major situation like this in their life. So, you know, the social, the mental well-being of our students is very important right now. A lot of our students, you know, school is their safe place. This is where they come to get away from their problems. And I knew it was going to be difficult, because, like, for elementary teachers, you know, they're huggers. I mean, they love to hug their kids, and they can't do that now. And it's really tough. But just having that face, they know their familiar face, that teacher that really cares about them, showing they love them every day and being there for them, has made a big difference. I'm hoping, very optimistic, that our scores will be where they need to be. They may be a little lower. However, you know, I was excited about the testing last year, and we didn't get the opportunity to do that because of the things we had put into place that shown that our kids were improving with their skills. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me, just with a couple minutes left here, I'll go to you, Ted, and touch on something that Bo just touched on. That, I mean, schools, again, we obviously first and foremost are places for education, but they are also, I mean, for many kids, they are a form of a safety net. Right. And I think you and I have had that conversation before about you all provide a lot of social services, as it were, and, you know, counseling and things outside reading, writing, and arithmetic. Have you been able to continue to provide those services? And have you seen an uptick in, this is a very stressful time. And as I think you both have said, particularly for little kids, they don't fully understand all these restrictions and these masks. They don't have the full concept on it. What have you seen on that front, kind of the whole child mental health aspects?
Yeah, that's a great question. It certainly was a big part of what drove our decision to proceed. I mean, we went into this like everybody else. We weren't sure if it was going to work or if we were going to be contributing to, you know, putting kids in harm's way in terms of their health. We knew we thought we had a pretty good plan and a good chance of keeping them safe. But we do think that in-person learning is a better opportunity to connect with those kids. I'd say what we've seen overall is that when there are situations that we have even in a normal year with kids in terms of mental health, it's probably exponentially kind of compounded because of the situation. There's just more factors at play in terms of stressors at home for the parents and things. So it's definitely something that we've had to keep an eye on. But to be fair, a lot of those situations, they've been rising in recent years anyway. I just think kids are under more stress and pressure than they ever have been. And this pandemic certainly hasn't helped.
Yeah. Last word to you, Bo. I mean, have you seen an increase in just these non-academic, these challenges, the mental health, broadly speaking, challenges that students can face given all the stress? I mean, you've got parents who've lost jobs or have job uncertainty. I mean, it's just a horrible situation.
Oh, absolutely, Eric. I think you've hit it on the head of the nail right there, is that, you know, our students have seen things they have never seen before. You know, mom and dad, you know, losing jobs, you know, living day to day. We actually took on another role, but we hired another social worker. We now have two. We've made more home visits, of course, being socially distant, checking up on those students. We served over 140,000 meals this summer alone for our students, just to make sure that they were taken care of. But at the end of the day, you know, our number one priority is to take care of our kids. Doesn't matter if they're in the building or outside of the building. And I take that very, very seriously, like all my colleagues in that. And because if our kids don't feel, if they don't feel safe, if they're hungry, they're not going to learn. And that's one thing we have always been from the start, is that kids come first in Millington, and we will continue that.
All right. Well, we will leave it there. Thank you both for joining us. Thank you, Bill. And thank you for watching. Again, remember, you can get past episodes of all our shows on the WKNO.org website, including conversations with other superintendents from all the local school systems that we've done over the last month. Or you can download the full podcast of the show from the Daily Memphian site or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.